Hello and welcome to another edition of Tech Plus. As always, Ion with you and Kane, and we have 60 minutes ahead of us discussing all the latest in technology, and it's been yet another exciting week in the world of tech. Kane, how's it? Welcome.
Hello, hello. We're back at it again, eh?
Yes, how's it going? It's our final one for January. What happened?
It is. We almost made it to another one next week, eh?
Almost.
When is the first? On Wednesday?
Jeez, I don't know, eh? Where's my calendar?
Where's my calendar? You know that movie, Dude, Where's My Car? I feel like that's accurate for 2024.
I always look for a paper calendar, but I mean, you can just check on your computer or your phone. I'm a bit old school.
Thursday's the first.
Oh, yeah, Thursday's the first. So next week's show will be the 3rd of Feb already.
It's flying, eh?
It's almost time for the Christmas decorations again. What's happening?
It was just the other day. We were like, yo, we're packing up shop for the year, you know? And now we're like, okay, first month done. I mean, that's crazy.
But you also have other people saying, hey, shut up. January was long enough, you know? We just had payday now, thank goodness. Because, you know, you spend all your money in December.
All the parents are like, no, my kids just went back to school. Just give me a second. Here we have, speaking of seconds, I wonder what the cinema industry is doing, because I feel like they're definitely coming second to streaming services.
And you know what, Ken? I was actually thinking about that. I think, what was it, 2 weekends ago, 3 weekends ago, I went to the Garden Route Mall, the cinema there, Sterkinikor. They've got like, I think, 6 or 7 or 8 cinemas there.
Did you go there to watch a movie?
Yeah.
Okay.
I went with my cousin, and we went to cinema number 1. That's the big one with the double doors. But, man, they started the movie for about 10 people, you know.
Really?
You can sit anywhere. I mean, you obviously made a booking online, but you can sit anywhere. But listen, you know what really got to me?
What's that?
Was not the cost necessarily of the movie ticket, because she got discounts. She's got Discovery or something. It was the cost of the freaking popcorn, the slushy, and just a packet of Astros being almost R200.
What? That's a meal. That's a meal, yes, for 1.5 people.
Yes. So I was thinking, I mean, you get it. It's nice and neat. It's in a nice pack, you know. It's almost like a tray that you get it in and you just carry it to the movie. But it's not nearly worth the money you pay for it.
No, and I feel like, man, you have to buy, it looks like you have to buy the snacks with the ticket. Like, you buy these snack combos.
Yeah.
But I feel like you could just go then get whatever snacks you want. And then I feel like the snacks are like subpar.
Yep.
Like the pop, when we went there, our popcorn was stale.
Ach no, that's the worst.
I was like,
like the last bit from the machine or what?
Like, if you could go pick daisies off of a field of grass, probably tastes a bit better.
Oh no.
You know, it was stale.
Did you complain or did you just go with it?
No, not really. I mean, I thought, you know.
You don't want to be a Karen.
The thing is, I don't want to be a Karen. Number 2, obviously the popcorn was cold, so we had put spicing on it, but there was only like 3 flavors of spice to pick from, and I wasn't particularly a fan of
it. Only three flavors.
Like sour cream and chives, vinegar, and butter.
Butter,
That's it.
That's it.
Thank you very much. I'd rather just take it.
Table. Usually you would go to this table and you have so many spices to pick from.
I think the next time I go to the George Mall, I'm probably going to like go to Spur, get a takeaway, go eat that at the movies.
Yeah, but now I understand why people are smuggling stuff in there, you know?
Yeah.
In their hair, in their tummies.
See people opening up half their jacket, selling you some, you know, black market sweeties.
Yeah, but I was thinking, you know, Sterkinikor, they're still obviously, you know, making up for the losses suffered during the pandemic almost 4 years ago. But I mean, when I go and watch a movie, I don't want to pay so much money that it feels like I need to get shares in the company.
Yeah, it feels like you're going onto NASDAQ and purchasing stock and you're getting a movie ticket for free. But apparently South African cinema companies are shifting strategies now.
Because, all right.
I mean, how do you fill out a movie house with streaming services? It's like, oh, I'm gonna watch it at home, you know, mm-hmm. I'm gonna order some takeaway.
And TVs are getting bigger, people are getting bigger and bigger TVs, good sound. What
Someone
more do you need?
The other day just bought my new immediate recently bought like a 75-inch TV. It's basically like a wall.
It's like
just use it as a divider for your property.
The TVs are so big right now, they can't even steal it anymore.
There is no way. There is absolutely no way. Even trying to assemble the thing is terrifying. If you ever try to assemble one of the newer TVs that are like 75 inches, you put it on a double bed and it's going off each side of the bed, you know? Like,
have to come back 4 nights, you know? Every night they take a part of
the TV. There was actually a TV that I was working with the other day that's so paper thin that I honestly felt like, you know, you have to put it on its face in order to attach the legs, and it just feels like when you lean it over and it's like falling on its own weight, it feels like it's gonna snap in half.
I can imagine. Yeah,
not a fun feeling.
Mm-mm.
Top 10 least fun things to do next time when the TV company says, or the delivery company says, would you like us to set the TV up for you? Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, yeah.
You know, because if they break it
costs a lot of money as well, man.
No, now you buy it, you set it up yourself, falls over, and you're done. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly.
If they do it,
there's a bit of a warranty or whatever.
Well, if they do it, I'm definitely not taking it back after that.
They look very fragile, I must say.
So, according to New Metro's head of marketing, Milani Williams, said the company will also screen international concert films and live music performances directly from the cinema. So in some time, it's almost like a full 180.
Yeah.
It's almost like a full 180. Live concert events, cinemas, you know, live music performances turned into movie houses, turned into live performances again. Apparently so.
Full circle.
With streaming services gaining more popularity, the future of the movie theater industry primarily boils down to two main factors: the content being produced, as well as the overall experience on offer from the consumer. Milani Williams told My Broadband. Apparently at New Metro, they pride themselves on offering the best possible cinematic experience for their customers. From their multi-sensory 4DX cinemas, which will immerse the viewer into the movie itself, our larger-than-life extreme cinemas, and our luxurious VIP cinemas. You know, I've never been to an extreme cinema. I've never been to a luxurious VIP cinema. But do you remember the craze when Sterkinico was advertising those prestige movie tickets where you kind of sit there and you actually, a waiter comes to you and you place an order?
Sure.
Never been to that either.
No.
But I might be interested in doing something like that.
Yeah, and now they've got the love nests, as they call it, like double seats.
Yes.
Where you could sit with your girlfriend. You know what I picked up as well while there? I felt, geez, the cinema's really warm because it was like 30 degrees outside and there was no aircon on.
They don't have aircon?
No.
Do cinemas have aircon? They do, I'm sure.
Well, at least when I used to go to
maybe
the movies,
to run it was more expensive than what they would have actually.
Yeah, they would have put like 10 people inside. We're not putting on the aircon, but
I would have demanded
it. Nice having it on because you've got no windows, you know.
No,
that wasn't very lacquer.
I would have walked out, gone to game, bought a fan, and tried to plug it in. Speaking of, you know, who's not a fan of Takealot of Amazon right now? It's Takealot.
I'm sure.
They are apparently, what My Broadband did was they looked at some of the pricing that we can expect for items on Amazon versus items on Takealot. And I guess in some way, shape, or form, we have a very rough idea right now of what some of the price differences are going to be. Apparently, if you look at some of the stuff, they looked at like a Naomi TV box, you know, your smart TV adapter thing. Takealot had a cheaper price. Amazon was 1,700 rand for the Naomi 4K TV box, and Takealot was 1,000 rand. So 700 rand less. I mean, that's a lot. That's almost, you know, 30% basically. An Xbox Series wireless controller is 50 rand cheaper on Amazon, 1,700 versus 1,650. A Skullcandy Rail anti-noise cancelling or active noise cancelling headphones are 2,800 rand on Takealot and 1,900 rand on Amazon. Okay, that's a big difference. It's a 1,000 rand difference. Then you have your Garmin Vivo Active 5 smartwatch retailing at 6,000 rand on Takealot or 8,400 rand on Amazon. Almost flipping 2,300 rand more expensive, which is no joke.
Yeah.
Also, the Amazon delivery time of all the products that we've mentioned is anywhere from 12 to 20 days, whereas Takealot can be up to 1 day if you're in a region, or 3 days. If you're buying an Intel Core i5 14600K, which is one of the newer processors, on Takealot it costs you 8,800 rand. On Amazon, 7,400 rand. So 1,400 rand difference there. pretty decent. Takealot can take up to 12 days for it to arrive at your house, whereas Amazon will take up to 18 days. So if you're okay waiting an extra, you know, 6 days, you can find yourself saving 1,400 rand, which is not bad. A Nintendo Switch, right? Who doesn't want a Nintendo Switch? 9,200 rand on Takealot, 8,800 rand on Amazon. Okay, seeing a bit of a difference there. Not much, about 400 rand. 400 rand. Then you got the Meta Quest 2. This is crazy. This will blow your mind. The Meta Quest 2 retails at 11,500 rand on Takealot and 6,400 rand on Amazon.
Eee.
That's 40%
yeah
less, which is insane. Then you've got the Asus TUF GeForce 4060 Ti OC edition, which is a pretty beefy graphics card. 12,000 rand in Takealot, 10,500 rand on Amazon. And the final product that we'll take a look at is the Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 5, which retails for the 512 gigabyte, retails for 37,900 rand in South Africa. Ouch. Or a whopping 49,000 rand on Amazon.
Hey.
So what you're basically seeing here is Amazon seems to take the cake with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 product listings being cheaper than that of Takealot, and Takealot seems to have 1, 2, 3, 4 pricing options cheaper than that of Amazon. What it sounds like to me is great competition. It sounds like we're going to be getting good deals as consumers having the option of choosing both.
It sounds like there's going to be a war at some stage, hey? Shots will be fired.
The war on commerce in South Africa. Yeah, on e-commerce in South Africa.
But definitely, Takealot versus Amazon. I think there will be some pretty hectic board meetings.
There's going to be a Netflix movie about it.
What? Really?
No, I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe.
Like the Social Network. But yeah, I think there will be a lot of tension in the boardroom, eh? That we will never know about.
Takealot. Well, the first sign that there might be some tension in the boardroom, at least for me, is that on the 26th of January, on Friday, Takealot announced that they have a new CEO.
Ooh, the other one probably had chest pains. Excuse
himself. Heart palpitations. Couldn't even open up Google shopping anymore without PTSD striking him down.
I should have developed
a phobia for product listings.
Hey, but yeah, that must be massive stress. I'm sorry, I know we shouldn't laugh, but you know, it's just, yeah, it's pretty hectic. Whatever is the reason for him leaving, I don't know.
So apparently Frederik Zietsman will become the new CEO, while the previous CEO will step down into the role of executive chair from 1st February.
He's not running away.
So he can sit down.
He's just
taking a standing CEO role anymore. He's going to take an executive chair.
He's going to sit chair. Now. Yeah, he's tired. Okay.
He's going to put his feet up for a bit.
No, it makes sense.
Let the hot flush pass over. So Zietsman has been at Takealot since 2015 when he joined as a profitability analysis. An analyst. He was appointed head of the marketplace in 2017 and has been CEO of Takealot.com since March 2021. Mahalare was appointed from outside the company after founder Kim Reed stepped aside to serve as chairman of the group. So definitely some reshuffling going along at Takealot. Definitely to prepare. You know, you've got an expert, a previous expert at profitability analysis, right? Who's now stepping in as CEO. So, I mean, what does that tell you? If you've got a previous person who joined the company as a profitability analyst, what is his role now as CEO against Amazon?
Yeah.
Profitability.
Exactly.
That's their main concern.
That's the answer there.
And remember, we talked 2 weeks ago, apparently they're not worried about Amazon. You know, they're investing lots of money, quickly switching their captain.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a bit. There's stress. There's no way.
Stuff happening there.
There's no way. There's not.
They can
stress
deny
there.
It. You can see it in the way they move now.
Yeah, you can see it. Yeah. It's calculated. I mean, I would think that. I think that you can expect to see some hell of a fight going down. It's going to be a war of the worlds. You know.
But we're winning as consumers.
Absolutely, we're winning. We're winning. Yes. We just got to choose who we support pretty carefully. Because if everyone uses Amazon, cheers, Takealot. Now Amazon runs the show, and they're even in a more advantageous position. So we got to see what happens. And here in a little article before we transition to a music break, you know, sometimes you can go and you can get an ISP subscription of some kind. Maybe it's fiber or maybe it's ADSL and you'll get a router.
Yeah.
Right. And I think a lot of people assume that that router belongs to them.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
Right.
They tell you.
Yeah. So the mobile network operator Rain has blamed a switch in countries for months-long delays in collecting free-to-use 5G routers from former customers, denying that it had surrendered the devices. There is sometimes a misunderstanding among broadband customers that a router provided by the internet service provider, or ISP, is their property. Despite many service providers offering free-to-use routers, My Broadband found numerous Rain-branded routers sold unlawfully by second-hand goods retailers and individuals on online classifieds forums. So basically what's happening is people get a Rain subscription, decide it's not for them, and then sell the router.
Oof, that's
and someone
good.
Else buys it. And then Rain says, okay, we're coming to collect our router. They say, sorry, we don't have the router anymore. And Rain says, cool, you can pay us then.
Yeah.
And that's obviously what's causing the conflict. So note to self, don't just assume that your new brand new router that just got dropped off by your ISP on the first month belongs to you. They could come asking for that back.
I know. I knew that, actually. Also, cell phones, you know, when you have a cell phone contract, it still belongs to the cell phone network until that contract ends.
Which is crazy if you think about it. Can't sell it or anything.
Yeah, so in that, if it's a 2-year contract or a 3-year contract, you have to keep that phone, you have to pay every month. Otherwise, they can take it back. Even though you paid already, you're not getting that money back. They'll take their phone.
What always blows my mind is when you're buying a second-hand phone, how do you know if it's a contract phone or a normal phone?
Exactly. The person can lie to you selling it, especially on Facebook Marketplace. Be very, very careful because let's say they got a phone and they ended the contract prematurely or just stopped paying, and now MTN or whatever cell phone network is going to blacklist that phone.
Yeah.
You're buying it, not knowing it, and you're so happy with your new phone, and now all of a sudden it's not working.
No, it's blocked.
Exactly. So that's a problem when you're buying secondhand.
Yeah, I think the best way you can get around that is just to ask for proof of purchase. If they can prove materialize some like receipt that shows, you know, a number with many zeros in, technically, that they purchased this phone.
Well, hopefully that's not falsified as well.
Yeah, you better hope so. But I mean, I think it would be a good sign, depending on how the reaction of that person goes asking for that info.
Imagine this now. They blacklist the phone and you can't get a hold of the seller.
I bet you there's someone listening on the show that's definitely had that happen to them before.
Yeah, well, we'd like to hear from you. Because what do you do? Because you can't get your money back now, and whoever sold it was aware of it. They were probably lying to you. They were aware that it's going to be blocked. You also can't approach the cell phone network and ask them to unblock it because they won't listen to you.
Yeah, they don't know.
So that's a very bad position to be in, hey? It's not worth it. I mean, then just buy a new phone.
Better to know if it's been in a previous contract position, because it could just be announced stolen and other things. So yeah, you got to play your cards carefully.
And maybe they didn't block it right away, but a month or three later, and then you've got big problems.
On that note, is it time for a music break?
It sure is. And then we're coming back with a funny story that happened this week in Oudtshoorn.
Nice.
It's got to do with technology.
Okay, let's do it.
Deep end, and angels in the snow. Cause every day we go to Sam. There ain't no time for slow. We gonna make these days your best friend. They'll be gone before you know. We don't need no reason. Season of winter's got you freezing. Deep down inside you know. When you get that summer feeling, it's freedom. The days for the season. Swim team, come on.
We're back with Tech Plus. If you just joined us, you're late, but not too late. We still have a lot of stories to share with you for this week's edition. It's Ian and Kane with you. Listen, Kane, I don't know if you heard about the story this week. I read it in the news, and it was quite funny. In Oudtshoorn, two ladies, they are the admins of WhatsApp groups. And on this WhatsApp group, or on these WhatsApp groups, I don't know if they actually shared it directly or if it was somebody on the group, but they're responsible for what happens on the group. In social media law, the admins are also responsible for what's happening there. Anyway, so somebody on the group, it could be the two ladies or somebody on the group, they shared Media 24 publications on it, the PDF versions, the e-books, the online versions. So we're talking Huisgenoot, U Magazine, all those big publications. So every week they would share it on there for free, the PDF version. And all the other ladies on the group, the Tannies, they could get the magazine there now for free. They kept doing this, and then Media 24 knew about it. They somehow got wind of it. And Media 24 sent them various instructions and letters to stop it. They didn't stop it. And this week, the two ladies appeared, I think it was today, yesterday, appeared in court for this. The two admin ladies appeared in court for this. Media 24 suing for loss of income and damages. And these ladies have to pay it with the legal fees. So I'm waiting to hear about the outcome of that case.
That's
so let's follow it up next week. But even if they didn't do it, those two ladies, people on the groups did it, and they are now also responsible for it, as well as the other people.
That seems crazy.
Because they're the admins, hey?
That's crazy.
So you got to be very careful what people do on groups.
Responsibility when you when you're managing.
And obviously the Tannies are very upset now, because now they're not getting the weekly magazine
so
anymore.
So they've got community uproar above and beyond all of this.
But yeah, I mean, that is, it's a huge copyright infringement. It's a huge copyright breach. So I can understand Media 24's side, you know, because they also need to make money. And sharing PDFs like that, I mean, you get so many books as well available for free online. You just need to know where to get it. Free ebooks, you know. The authors, you're stealing, you're reading, but you're stealing because the authors aren't being paid for it. And the publishers also. It's not right.
No, it's not. It's not. It's definitely a type of piracy, no matter how,
piracy,
how
absolutely.
Friendly the,
it is.
The method. Speaking of solar panels and solar power, private solar installations in South Africa now generate nearly double the amount of solar power provided by plants connected to Eskom's grid.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you think it's actually at a level now where it's actually helping the grid? Definitely.
Well, let's talk about it. The power utility's latest renewable statistic shows it has roughly 2.7 gigawatts of installed solar capacity, or 2,700 megawatts of installed solar capacity, all of which is provided by independent power producers. PV solar plants account for about 2.2 gigawatts or 2,200 megawatts of the capacity, while concentrated solar plants, CSPs, contribute up to 500 megawatts of power. According to a senior economist at Trade and Industrial Policy Strategies, Gaila Montmassin, South Africa had around 5,200 megawatts or 5.2 gigawatts of private solar capacity by the end of 2023. So, you know what's very interesting is, you know, 5.2 gigawatts is a lot of power. And we in the past talked about how South Africa only had about 900 megawatts of solar generative ability. So considering we're at five times that, I would agree that most certainly private power production through solar solutions has most certainly skyrocketed and shrunk that of what Eskom is able to put onto its own grid. And it's been done in a very short period of time as well. So it just shows you that people moving as people can do more than one government moving on behalf of the people. Especially when we saw China activate 2.3 million residents to install solar power and produce 50 gigawatts of power, which is 10 times what we just described as South Africa's new power generation capabilities from a solar point of view.
So solar is really big time. I know that they're battling to get stock at some stages, some of the solar suppliers, because of every second. I mean, if you drive around nowadays, every second house has got at least three or four of the panels on the roof. And I mean, if you add it up, it's going to make a big difference, and it's going to keep the lights on for those of us who don't have solar panels yet.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that have switched from just straight wall power per normal, and they've subsidized it with some sort of inverter, battery, and solar panel setup, and they save money on electricity every month.
Exactly.
Like, even after cost, you know? Because they're using mainly like a rent-to-own system. You get a lot of them in Gqeberha and Joburg and Cape Town, rent-to-own. Works out cheaper than paying normal electricity. So when you confront with like, I can rent to own this at, you know, 2,000 rand a month, and I'm only spending, you know, 2,400 rand a month on electricity for my three bedroom home with, you know, four people living in it. It kind of makes sense just to switch to the rent to own thing. You own solar, you own batteries, you own panels, all in, you know, in a couple of years, and you ended up, and you paid 300, 400 rand less for electricity every month to get there, and then eventually you're just paying fractional amounts. So it does, I mean, it makes total sense to go solar, and we're seeing a lot of people do it. I just wish we could see some more incentive into the individual producing power through solar and the opportunity to reverse sell that power back into the grid. Because when we saw China do it, we saw some people earning up to $2,000-$3,000 per month.
Yo, have you got any plans to go solar?
I do. I mean, I've already got the inverter and the battery.
Yeah.
But Eskom charges my battery back up when the power comes back on.
Yes.
So it would just mean that during the day, if Eskom wasn't on, I would take power directly from the panels, and whatever excess would charge the batteries, or I would take power from the panels, and whatever is in, if there wasn't enough power to go around, then I'd take from the batteries, and then after using the power, upon, you know, disengaging electronics and things like that, it would then use the sun to charge, and after being charged by the sun and the sun going down, then Eskom would charge it. So it makes like total sense to I mean, you've got the sun beating your house every day,
especially
why not
now
make
in
power
summer
from it,
it's
know?
For free
I mean, the panels aren't for free, but in all terms of the idea, the electricity, the power that you're generating is sourced for free. So, and you have if you have a battery as well, you're literally taking power that you're generating for free and storing it somewhere for you to use later. You can't have a better system.
Exactly.
Can't have a better system. Talking about good systems, Starlink could get its first cellular users in 2024. Starlink is just motoring away. South Africa is still not allowed to have
We don't
Starlink.
Even have the internet yet, and they're already moving on.
So T-Mobile US Inc. may offer space-connected mobile devices to customers within the year as it partners with SpaceX and attempts to essentially offer space-connected mobile internet and phone services. So Elon Musk, SpaceX's in early January launched their initial batch of satellites capable of offering mobile phone service. Operating like a cell tower in space, the Starlink satellites will work with users' existing phones rather than using specialized equipment. The new services aim to offer connections using normal consumer mobile phones rather than expensive wireless equipment that has been available for decades. Carriers say the satellite-linked phones will likely be used in remote areas where cell reception is poor or non-existent, and say the services can be used to summon help if needed. So you're looking at emergency calls, you're looking at emergency GPS, you're looking at accident assistance. So T-Mobile is the first of several terrestrial telecommunications operators to enter into agreements with SpaceX to use its direct-to-cell services in areas with no tower coverage. Capabilities will begin with text and progress to picture messaging and talk. T-Mobile Chief Executive Officer Mike Sievert told investors on an earnings call. He said, if things go well, we should have these capabilities in customers' hands this year. Wow. Satellite internet, man. The world is moving fast. This isn't satellite internet like of the past. You know what's so interesting that I think not a lot of people know, and I might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right, is BlackBerry BIS, BlackBerry's internet service. That was satellite.
Yeah.
So
I didn't know it back then. I didn't know, but I found out in recent years.
So here we see Starlink's talking about, you know, using satellites at cell towers, and there you see BlackBerry did it. Now, of course, they didn't do it in the same way. You couldn't make mobile phone calls and things like that, so they didn't have that, you know, kind of terrestrial technology to communicate from satellite to mobile phone as if the satellite is a cell phone tower. But your phone most certainly connected to a BlackBerry internet service satellite, which allowed you to have uncapped internet.
Remember, BIS. Didn't you get like a little icon on your phone
when it told you you were connected?
Yes.
It did.
So that was actually via satellite.
Yeah, so if somebody came and mowed down all the cell towers in your radius, your nearest vicinity,
still be connected.
You'd still be connected to the BlackBerry internet service.
Wow. Satellite.
I think they discontinued those satellites the other day or the other year.
Yeah.
Something like that. They finally announced that no one could connect via those anymore.
Oh.
Man, not always the best news.
That was pretty fancy, eh?
Yeah.
BIS. Yeah.
You know, it's also like, you know, tribute to a fallen comrade. NASA. Remember the Ingenuity helicopter? The Mars rover.
Yes, that's right.
It was originally thought to only produce a couple of flights, but it actually ended up lasting 33 times longer than it was originally intended to last, and it just had its final flight.
Aww.
So the Ingenuity helicopter mission achieved powered flight on another world. It brought Zigbee and Linux, which is the operating system software that the rover runs off of, to Mars, and survived some close calls, lasting 33 times longer than it originally planned. But on Thursday, NASA officials said that after a loss of communication and rough landing last week, its rotor blades are too damaged to fly again. The Perseverance rover that brought it to Mars is too far away to get a picture, but there was a picture with a shadow of the helicopter's broken blade.
Yo.
That was taken from the helicopter while on Mars. So it basically took like a picture of the ground, which showed its blade where it was slightly damaged. Mm. And of course, now it can no longer fly anymore. So
yeah, not safe anymore.
Imagine that. Imagine being responsible for getting a helicopter to Mars that flew 33 times longer than intended. You know, captured the craziest of aerial photography, probably some of the best aerial photography we've ever received from somewhere like Mars, and you know, just rocked up every day to fly, you know, and it still works. It's just its one blade is a bit broken, but it still works.
That's very good,
which is very, very cool. And then, you know, another tribute to fallen comrades, Spirit and Opportunity rovers. If anybody knows, in 2004, NASA sent solar-powered Spirit and Opportunity rovers to the surface of Mars on January 3rd and January 24th, respectively. Their touchdown, remember, this is 2004, so this is crazy. They basically put a whole bunch of airbags around the rovers, the Spirit rover and the Opportunity rover, back in 2004. So it looked like literally a triangle of basically like a prism of airbags, and this thing landed on the Mars surface, bounced because it was inflated with airbags, and it made its way for a safe landing because it bounced on the floor like a bouncy ball, and then out popped the rover for Spirit and Ingenuity, and they ran and they worked and they did their job, and that's how they got the very first rovers, or some of the very first rovers, to to the Red Planet that long time ago. In 2010, they lost contact with Spirit, which was 6 years after it landed. 6 years surviving on a planet thousands of millions of kilometers away. And Opportunity Rover lost contact in 2019, traveling 28 miles during its almost 15 years in operation. Wow.
Mm.
Very, very cool.
Very impressive, eh?
Yeah. Is it time for a music break?
It is, it is. And then we're back with more Tech Plus.
There's a space in my heart when it all comes crashing down. Anytime I hear your name out in public, there's a place that I go every time that you're in town. It's just me in my nights, in my stomach. And it's true, it wasn't easy getting over you.
Welcome back to Tech Plus. This is the final chapter for this week. Kane, what have you got for us next?
Man, we have some really interesting stuff. Do you know Pokemon?
Oh man, of course.
Who doesn't know Pokemon, right?
Yeah, I can even name the characters if you like. Pikachu, Jigglypuff,
and
Togepi,
and
obviously now I'm under pressure. Now I'm forgetting, but I know that my favorite is Pikachu. Yeah, Pikachu with the red cheeks.
He knows.
Can you name some for me?
No.
Really?
Well, I could probably. You know, now that you're on the spot, probably not. But all the ones that you mentioned, I know.
And I also liked Jesse and James.
That
evil couple with the, I think she had like long red hair and he had blue hair. They were evil, trying to steal the Pokemons, remember?
So there was a game that came out recently on computer, and it was a little bit similar to Pokemon. So really what it was basically kind of built on the same premise. You're someone who runs around and explores the world. The world is filled with lots of little creatures. You build spheres to throw the spheres at the creatures and catch the creatures, and you can end up re-throwing those creatures to attack each other, and you place them in your base. It just basically looked a lot like Pokemon. And it is, the name of this game was called Pal World. And upon it coming out, I think within the first few days, it had 8 million copies sold.
Sure.
And it was on its way to being quite the shakeup of 2024, and it continues to still go along that similar trajectory. Having only released in January 2024, but having made such a large splash in the gaming world, a lot of attention has come to it. In fact, even Pokemon went so far as to say they're going to go and investigate Palworld to see if there is any particular infringements or copyright strikes that they can gather from it, which is quite terrifying for the game. The CEO of the game came out to say that he's in fact not too worried, as they ran it through some pretty stringent copyright checks and things like that prior to going live. But if that not to make matters worse, a modder, you know what a mod is? It's someone who actually edits game files and shares it with the community, so the community can have access to more. He actually went into the game and adjusted the game and modded it so that he actually put real Pokemons inside of the game. So that's like even taunting the bull even worse. So he actually got hit with a DMCA from Nintendo, and he ended up posting online saying, you know, guys, that's it for me. They got me. You know, it's fun while it lasted. I'm out. So the game that seemed like Pokemon, that was under scrutiny for possibly being very similar to Pokemon, had a community member come on and basically load Pokemon on, and that just probably wasn't good for their cause.
No, definitely not.
But that definitely happened, and I'm sure, you know, if anybody here games, they would recognize the name. Porsche's also released their second ever, or announced their second ever electric vehicle, and it is a electric Megane SUV starting at about $80,500. Which is actually, I mean, that's not a bad amount of money, to be totally honest, for an electric Porsche.
I see Toyota's also releasing new electric vehicles as soon as March, eh?
Yes, and you know what's even better? There's some good news for South Africa in all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, as of right now, take a guess, how many electric cars do you think have been sold in South Africa to date?
You don't even see them in our area.
I haven't seen anything.
They're all in the cities.
I've only ever seen one Tesla in my whole life, and that was in Portugal.
Oh, wait, I saw an electric vehicle here in Eisner once.
I have as well. There's a Mini going around somewhere.
Yeah, I saw a BMW.
A BMW?
It was in the complex, yeah.
So we have, apparently, how as many? South Africa, we have now shattered a record for electric vehicle sales in 2023. Apparently, during 2023, we set a new record for the segment, having sold 931 fully electric vehicles in South Africa.
That's not bad.
That is not bad at all. The number was revealed by Toyota South Africa during its State of the Motoring Industry, or SOMI 2024 address at the Kyalami Racing Circuit on Thursday, 25th of January, 2023. The 931 EVs sold are over 85% more than 2022's 502 units sold. So we're up from 502 units to 931, surpassing all the fully electric models sold in South Africa from 2020 to 2023 by 119 units. What that really means is previously in 2022 we sold 502 units, and in 2023 we sold 931 units, which is 119 units more than we sold during 2020 to 2023. How interesting is that?
That's very interesting. So hopefully we'll see more of them on our local roads as well.
Yeah, so according to Toyota South Africa, the number of fully electric models available to car buyers increased from 8 in 2021 and 17 in 2022 to 31 in 2023, doubling the consumer options. Consumers are not only getting a wider range of EVs to choose from, but several models are now selling for below 1.5 million rand, making the fully electric option more accessible. Overall, the South Africa sales volumes of new energy vehicles, or NEVs, which includes traditional hybrids, or HEVs, and plug-in hybrids, PHEVs, increased by roughly 61%. How interesting is that? That's great. That's great science. I was wondering when we're going to see some electric vehicle
finally.
Push. Now I just need to see some electric charger push, because if we keep getting more electric vehicles but no more electric chargers, we're going to have some problems.
We need more of those, definitely.
You're going to see people using solar panels and jerrying them onto their car so they can get some charging.
Yeah.
Man, oh man.
But they put those chargers in the weirdest places, eh?
They do.
I don't know why.
There's one in the Eisner Mall, but in the underground parking, in a place like you have to get lucky enough to drive past. It's not like a regular route.
Yeah, and I want to know who's paying for the electricity of that charge that you're doing.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't be the mall or wherever it is. It can't be that place paying for it. How does that work? We haven't figured it out yet, hey?
That's a very good
I asked
good
it last time, but we didn't have the answer. I didn't think so.
Mm-mm.
Okay, next time I'm awake at 3, it will be one of my Googles. My 3 a.m. Googling sessions will be on that, and then I'll let you know.
So do you know who George Carlin is?
No.
So apparently he's a comedian.
Okay.
I don't know him all that well. Someone's going to be like, how the hell do you not know who this is? But I don't know who he is. He's a US comedian. His name's George Carlin. He passed away in 2008 at the age of 72. And his estate is now fighting to protect his legacy. Oopsie. How, you may ask. So apparently, creators of an AI-generated George Carlin special have been sued by the late comedian's estate. They are seeking immediate removal of the fake special, calling it a bastardization of Carlin's real work and his legacy. So let me ask you a question. If you were a massive George Carlin fan and AI watched every single one of his comedy shows and released a version which genuinely featured the actor, I mean the comedian, he seemed like the real guy, sounded like the real guy, told jokes as good if not better than the real guy, how would you feel? But at the same time, if you contrast that with if you had a brother or a sister or a friend or a mother or a father who was this comedian and you now see him basically not even existing in real life, having produced a show which possibly isn't even him and is simply like a simulation of him based on previous shows of his, you're probably going to have a couple things to say about how you don't want that to be something that is viewable and digestible
and
online.
And the problem is they're making money of it, and you know, there's a legacy to protect as well.
So George Carlin's estate has filed a copyright infringement lawsuit against Dudsy, the media company that used generative artificial intelligence to produce a fake hour-long comedy special that imitates the deceased star's voice and comedic style.
Sure.
The complaint filed in Los Angeles federal court on Thursday alleges that Carlin's copyrighted materials and likeness were used without permission or appropriate licenses, calling the special a piece of computer-generated clickbait, which detracts from the value of Carlin's comedic works and his harms his reputation. And I think I agree. I think you have no right to produce an entire show of someone else's work because you
had a
computer that could do it. At the same time, I do think it's really, really cool. So it's quite...
It's cool that it's possible, but I mean, they could at least know, you know, let the family know, get their blessing.
Yeah, for me, it's a conflict of kind of confusion because you don't really know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. In a way, it's a good thing, and in equally the same way, it's a bad thing. I think if the family and the friends are for it, it becomes a good thing. But I think if people are against it, it becomes a bad thing. And it's just one of those very interesting things because you're left basically in the middle where your decision and how the other people feel dictate how.
I can't believe we're talking about this, eh? I can't believe that we're actually dealing with these problems right now.
No, I mean, just the other day we were talking about Amazon's Alexa that had a voice mode that could imitate the voice of someone who had recently passed away. And we're like, that's crazy. No. And now they're not even asking permission. They're just going out and building entire like catalogs of content based on, you know, previous famous people. And I think that's just absolutely insane.
Did I tell you about that woman who threw away her Alexa?
No.
Because... in the middle of the night at 3 a.m., this Alexa just randomly started laughing. Did I tell you that?
No.
She started laughing. What would you do?
If my Alexa randomly started laughing...
at 3 in the morning.
I'd unplug it, and if it kept laughing, I'd run.
I would... It's not... Why would it just laugh randomly like that, eh?
Laughing is a bit messed up, hey?
It's number one, it's creepy. Number two, it's probably a hacker or something.
Dude, I mean, the fact that laughing would...
That's just creepy, eh? Imagine creepy. In the dark.
3 a.m. Imagine you just wake up at 3 a.m. and there's someone laughing just in general. And you're like, who is this?
It's like a horror movie.
And it's an electronic device just having a good old laugh. You're like, Alexa, what's so funny? It's like, no, it's a great joke. You like to hear it.
It just laughed, eh? And it stopped again. But
it
I mean,
like
that's enough
out of
to
paranormal
send...
activity.
Yeah.
So, in a closing note, as one of the last topics before we wrap up for the week, the FTC is investigating Microsoft, Amazon, and Google investments into AI and Anthropic. The commission wants to understand the tangled web of investments between cloud providers and AI startups. So the FTC opened an inquiry into the investments of big tech companies that provide cloud services to smaller AI companies like OpenAI. The FTC sent letters to Alphabet, which is huge, Amazon, Anthropic, Microsoft, and OpenAI, requiring the companies to explain the impact these investments have on the competitive landscape of generative AI. The commission wants to scrutinize corporate partnerships and investigate investments with AI providers to build a better internal understanding of these relations and their impact on the competitive landscape. Basically, what they're saying is they want to make sure that they have a very good understanding of any kind of information or support or cloud computing technology or any kind of competition biased actions these megacorps are taking in facilitating the development and growth of AI. Because if you can help facilitate that growth by providing processing power, cloud computing technology, and you get a piece of the pie, or you get some sort of, you know, advantage over that of the competitive landscape, then from an anti-competition point of view, it's a bit of a problem. So it's super interesting to see the FTC take an approach to messaging Alphabet, Amazon, Anthropic, and Microsoft all in one to say, like, what are you doing with AI?
Yep.
You know, what is the partnership in place? Who's making the money? How much is the money being made? And they're basically asking those various questions. So it's going to be seriously interesting to see what happens there. As everything AI related, how the software runs, who runs it, how much it costs to be run, how much it costs to access it as a user, how much it costs to run it as a business. We also just had Google, who announced that they're providing cloud computing technology to people who want to run and deploy AI models for basically for free. So with all of that in mind, one needs to make sure that you know, Microsoft or Amazon, they don't have the wrong intentions in place, and they don't intend to create a monopoly for themselves, which is impossible for anyone to consider competing against, especially with AI and the development of AI. It could create the next super brand that's basically unstoppable, and even worse, possibly completely not even run by a human being. We're tunneling towards that, so we better keep a close eye on that. And on that kind of scary note, that's it from my side.
Do you think, just getting back to Alexa, do you think Alexa is one of the biggest spies ever disguised as a cute little helpful device?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think there's a difference between a great data collector and a spy. I don't think Amazon is a spy, because I think too many people are looking at it, you know, and trying to determine if it's listening to things without permission or capturing information that it shouldn't be capturing. But I definitely think as a data device, as a device which is basically interfacing between humans' voice and itself and deducing common questions that people ask, common searches that people have, common activities that people might participate in, day-to-day routines and activities as people move through houses and interact with smart devices. I think that aggregated data is so valuable as someone like Amazon, who sells products for a living, to be able to basically get behind the steering wheel and see without specific identifiers in terms of who is who and who is and who is here and who is there and who is searching what, but to see that data as an aggregate, are able to determine trends in the market, are able to determine demand for particular products and niche opportunities for those particular products. And then you see Amazon doing things like buying Roomba. You see it moving into local territories like South Africa.
Yeah.
And you ask yourself, well, how much of that is based on a decision that you've made, and how much is it based on data that you've got or acquired that has influenced that decision?
Exactly.
And I think that's where I say that it's the ultimate spy, but not in the way you think a spy works. It's just a data aggregator, which is of anonymous nature, which they're using to basically have an unfair approach to the market with knowledge on products and behaviors, which just cannot be garnered any other way than providing some kind of smart device to a smart home, you know.
That's a good answer.
Crazy.
I think you answered it. And on you scratched that itch now. No, that makes sense to me. I think it's a very good answer. Thank you, Kane. That's another edition of Tech Plus, and also a wrap for it for January. We'll see you next month.
First month of January done. Our first month of the year done. First month of January. Two more to go.
It kind of feels like
first month of the year done. 11 more to go. Second tech show of the year. Third one next week. I mean, it's going well so far. Tech's active. Looking forward to next week. Thanks to all of our listeners for listening in. We'll see you same time, same place.
Absolutely. Ditto. Thanks, Kane. Have a lucky weekend. Rest of your weekend.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
now come back to you. Come back to you. Now I'll be there for you if you call me.